Trade talks between the U.S. and China resume this week. There's been lots of hand-wringing as this protracted trade war between the U.S. and China has dragged on. We've been bringing you stories of how local businesses in Hawaii are dealing with tariffs and disrupted supply chains. So how is this dispute being viewed in China? Well, HPR's Ryan Finnerty sat down with Tyler McMahon, an English professor at Hawaii Pacific University. He recently returned from China, where he was leading a study abroad trip for some HPU students.
Yeah, I don't think it's any less so. China's different in that they essentially have one news network, CCTV, I believe it's called. And if you're like me and you don't speak any Mandarin, they have one English language sort of channel, which I believe is called CGTV. And they covered it quite extensively. You know, it's all news all the time. And they had a lot of panels of experts talking about the trade war. They sort of conflate it with Brexit a lot and situations in Europe as far as just what the West is up to. And they even had one segment where they had a person on the ground in Colorado sort of going to farmers and local businesses that were dependent on trade with China for, you know, finished goods coming in or raw materials going out, and talking about their impact. So it was very much on the news. I felt like it was similar to here in that we're all kind of bracing for the impacts. The folks further up the food chain are having to change how they run their businesses and whatnot. But, you know, I don't know about you, but I haven't changed what I buy at the grocery store or anything like that, or not been able to afford something at the store because of the trade war yet, though we don't know what may be coming down the pike soon.
Was there a common narrative that you picked up on in regards to the United States and the United States relationship with China?
Well, I would say that for the last half of our trip, the sort of meeting was going on between Putin and Xi Jinping, and they had a lot of that was covered pretty extensively on the English channel, and I watched quite a bit of that. Certainly, they're moving on, I mean, is the way I would put it. They're not waiting around for us to figure out, are we really in a trade war, or are we just sort of saber-rattling? They're, you know, forging alliances with other places. You know, this has been going on, I think, before the trade war came along, and the Belt and Road Initiative is part of that. But they, I think, accurately see themselves as a victim of an unprovoked attack. Certainly, you don't hear them talking about copyright infringement or currency manipulation or any of the reasons that are given to us for the trade war. It just seems to be the way that they tell the story. It's something that just came at them and they didn't ask for or anything like that. And that narrative is working out pretty well. It certainly was unified to the folks that you talked to. And it's essentially, I think the U.S. just has appeared unreliable. You know, it doesn't... They're not desperate to get that trade back. They're looking elsewhere for that trade is what it seemed to me.
If you listen to what the U.S. government is saying and U.S. officials, China is often painted as a villain, mm-hmm. and that this is sort of us, the United States, taking back control. How is the U.S. government and perhaps some of our leaders, how are they portrayed in Chinese media from what you saw?
Well, in the media, I would say that, you know, it's... We're just being portrayed as sort of erratic and not seeing the big picture and sort of prone to these almost emotional whims that are creating policy as opposed to, you know, a set of clear, consistent goals that go across administrations and whatnot, which, you know, obviously China is able to think a little bit more long term than we are because they aren't. They don't have re-elections bearing down on them as much as we do. So, yeah, I'd say that I didn't hear a lot of outwardly anti-American rhetoric at all, but it was a very sort of consistent message that we just couldn't be trusted in a way to kind of follow through on our commitments. This is something that I heard a lot because I was on local campuses quite a bit and speaking with graduate students and recent graduates who were trained as teachers of Mandarin. A lot of teachers who had positions sorted out in the U.S., you know, were found out at the 11th hour that they couldn't get their visas. And I spoke to some of those students and they really... The general consensus was, you know what, we'll go someplace else. We have a skill set. The rest of the world is desperate to learn Mandarin, and if they're going to sort of, you know, yank our chains and say one minute that we want you and the next minute we don't want you, let's just go to Canada, let's go to Australia, let's go to Africa. You know, other countries are seeing the value of learning this important language, and we don't have to wait around for these mixed messages and that kind of thing. And I feel like that was a bit of the narrative in the media regarding trade with the U.S. as well.
What were some of the regular Chinese people that you met discussing? How did they view the situation? I know, I think either while you were there or right before you got there, the Chinese government put out a travel alert for Chinese citizens traveling to the United States.
The travel alert came, it seemed to come right on the heels of the most recent shooting in Virginia. And that was one thing that I felt like, you know, the coverage was a little bit insincere in a way. I didn't hear anybody, you know, I didn't hear any actual Chinese folks say that they were canceling any trips or anything because of this travel alert. But it seemed a little bit as a way for China to get the moral high ground here, you know, to sort of say, well, you know, you guys have got these sorts of problems, and you're accusing us of things, and maybe you should remove the specs from your own eyes a little bit.
So it sounds like, in your experience, it wasn't really that big of a deal so far to most regular people over there.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I didn't meet anybody, as I said, who had drastically changed their lifestyle over the tariffs. And I haven't met anybody here yet who has. I think, you know, it's affecting farmers and small business owners more than it is consumers thus far. But the strongest sense I got was, they're moving on, you know, and China, from all the folks I spoke to, they don't picture themselves having the same economy for, you know, the next several decades. They're thinking about the next step already. You know, they don't picture just making iPhones for us forever, and the economics of their wages and whatnot are not going to justify that for the indefinite future. So I just get the sense of turning the page, and that summit with Putin really seemed to be wrapped up in that, the idea that, you know, we're going to have to find allies who will work with us and trading partners who will work with us, as opposed to ones who don't want to, or sort of who go back and forth. And I think there's generally, one of the things that really struck me about the coverage is every time President Xi had a microphone in front of him, it seemed like he wanted to talk about the environment. And, you know, this was my first and only trip, so I don't know if that's always been true, but I was struck by how often it was on his tongue and how often it came up with other people as well. My understanding is that in the last decade, they've moved a lot of factories and made a concerted effort to clean up the air, which it was, you know, by all accounts, much cleaner on our trip than it had been 5 years ago even. So that was, I think, a little microcosm of this, seeing the moral high ground be yielded and going and grabbing it, you know. I mean, I don't have anything to compare it to, but it is one of those issues where it just seemed like there was a vacuum that China's able to fill that we're not interested in filling. Another thing that struck me was when we did have a lecture on international relations from a very well-published and well-regarded Chinese professor of international relations and political science. He mentioned that, you know, China's GDP is almost certainly going to surpass the U.S.'s in the near future, you know, before, with or without these tariffs and things, but that it was foolish to see that as the only standard of superpowerism, and that the U.S. had, for one thing, we have our pop culture, which is very influential worldwide, and China doesn't have an equivalent, you know, a sort of international currency that way, and that we have a culture of treaties and alliances that, you know, go back to World War II, a very robust series of these kind of defense treaties, which China has never had, you know, and not in thousands of years have they ever had that kind of culture of making those alliances. So that his argument was that the U.S. had this sort of soft power that was greater than just GDP. And, you know, it struck me sitting there that we were very quickly sort of willing to sacrifice our alliances and our allyships in order to, you know, move the numbers a little bit on the GDP competition, perhaps foolishly.
Really interesting stuff, Tyler. Thanks for joining us
today. Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Hawaii Pacific University professor Tyler McMahon talking about his take on the trade conflict following a recent trip to China.